know that Romans are actually responsible for men having short hair? Because up until the Roman Empire, which you guys think about all the time.
I do. And their short hair.
Yeah, their short hair. Thank goodness. men would have long hair like women. But it apparently is much easier to grab somebody by the ponytail on the battlefield.
Agree.
So they all.
Did you know that in the NFL, even today, it is legal to tackle someone by their hair? Their hair is considered part of their uniform. If it's sticking
part
out of their helmet.
Uniform.
If it's sticking out of their helmet, you are allowed to pull them down by it. It is not against the rules.
I did not know that sports ball rule, but.
I'm just saying. Roman Empire coming back again. Yep. Short hair, they can't tackle you by your ponytail.
Best to be bald.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor Dave Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elisa McCarter.
Still here, still pretty successful.
I was responding to a text. I missed out on the long hair conversation.
You did.
Well,
you
want
to add in now?
Yeah.
You
what
know,
do you think?
You just got a haircut.
You did just get a haircut.
Well, I just
long
was afraid.
Long on the top, short on the sides.
Of people, you know.
It's like a reverse mullet.
Yeah.
No, that would be the.
Business up front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, business,
no, business
in the
back.
Party in the
front.
Party
in the front.
Yeah.
I'm more of like, you know, like a front for the mob. Than, you know, like, it's a money laundering operation on my head.
It's not what you think it is.
It's quite not. Quite an image there. Oh, well, hey, happy Easter Monday, everybody.
Happy Easter Monday.
That's the day that this comes out. We're not recording this on Easter Monday.
This is the day that our kids are not in school for some reason that we don't understand.
Oh, my kids are not in school on Good Friday.
Friday and...
You missed both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like our school district has a loose understanding of the separation of church and state.
There's that, yeah. And also, I don't think that they like to have our kids there actually ever. They get so many, like, four-day weekends.
And you're like, I get it.
Right. Yeah, the problem is neither do we, right?
We need a third entity.
We had an agreement.
Right. Just kidding. We love our kids.
We do love our kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
From a distance.
Yeah, we are recording in the midst of Holy Week.
We are.
Holy Wednesday.
Midst. Holy Wednesday.
We are knee deep in Holy Week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not quite to the
although today
to the waist yet.
We had to look up what today is.
Today's Holy Wednesday. Yeah. I knew what Holy Wednesday was.
Well, you just said Holy Wednesday, and we
that's
said,
what it is.
What
you
mean?
Said Jesus is teaching, but when we looked it up, it's actually Judas is planning to betray
Jesus.
I mean,
Jesus is also teaching.
It could have said Jesus is resting. According to Wikipedia.
Oh yeah, because Wikipedia is our biblical source for all.
Well, you know, you could, you know, you're like, probably teaching.
Yeah, and I'm probably right.
It sounded like a cop-out answer to me.
I
like,
mean,
it's Holy Wednesday.
He's got a lot. Jesus got a lot going on this weekend, so I mean, I think getting a you know, rest in is probably.
I would want to get a nap.
This is his last opportunity. This is it.
Yeah, we don't. We hear about the Last Supper. We don't hear about the last nap of Jesus.
Right. Jesus has a lot of social engagements for the next couple days, and then none for a little bit. To be fair,
I mean, it's hard to, you know. I guess a theological question is what happens on Saturday, right? Like, what is he up to?
He's going to hell.
We're down
and
to
tearing down the gates of hell.
Potentially,
that's what we say in the creed.
Well, now we say descended to the dead.
Yeah. Well,
right,
okay.
Because we can't agree on.
What hell means. Yeah.
You're right.
And there's only one verse that maybe suggests that.
Yeah.
So.
But then there's also the one verse with the zombies.
There is the zombie verse.
There's the zombie verse.
But that doesn't have anything to do with Jesus. That's the
resurrection. No, it's just cool. It's just
you
cool
preached
verse.
On the zombies?
I will not be preaching on that. That's in Matthew. It's not in Luke. We're in Luke this year. Okay. Yeah.
Darn. So, okay, when we're back in Matthew, are you going
to
be preaching
probably
on
not.
The zombie verse?
But for this year, that's my excuse.
If you are unfamiliar, when Jesus rises from the dead, it also says, like, 500 other people also rose from the dead. They were walking around talking to people.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Right. Somehow we only hear about Jesus.
Yeah.
We don't really hear that much about Jesus. Right. You know? The post-resurrection Jesus doesn't have quite a lot.
We hear even less about the zombies.
Right.
But are zombies in the Bible?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, according to we do not get there eating flesh.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
we don't,
our modern interpretation.
That's
zombie in its loosest form of person who is dead
who
is alive again.
So we have people whose heart stops. We bring them back to life. Are they technically a zombie at that point?
Yes.
Okay. Shoot them in the head. All right. Last of Us season 2 just came out.
So it takes 28 days, right? For them to start.
Exactly. Yeah. This was only 3, so it's safe. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you. Have you ever done a collected trading cards?
Oh.
Like Pokemon when I was little?
Yeah.
I did Pokemon.
Pokemon, baseball, anything like that?
Yeah.
I did a little bit of baseball cards once upon a time, but I was never super into them.
This might surprise you. I did not.
Yeah. Whoa.
Did you do Pokemon?
I did do a little bit of Pokemon. Yeah.
Yeah, I played Magic the Gathering. It's a card game. Yeah. So there you go. Yep. All right.
Were you supposed to collect cards in that? I thought it was just like a game.
Well,
you buy
packs.
Yeah. Okay. And like you want to build a.
And
a deck,
when you play. When you play at the gaming shop in the tournaments, you do risk a card from your deck against one another. So it is kind of that.
It's gambling.
Yes. All right. Well,
I'm surprised we didn't write a song about how evil it was because there's gambling.
We definitely were against Magic the Gathering.
Right, but it couldn't have been a rock song because that's also evil. Yeah, so it's pretty narrow genre choices.
It's got to be a musical from the 1950s.
I went to Awana at this church that said that. Awana? Do you know what Awana is even?
Do you know what Awana is?
Oh my gosh. You guys
don't know
what Awana
is.
Is
that the movie that Patrick's kid likes?
Yeah, we just saw Awana too.
away. No.
Awana.
I can't believe you guys don't know what Awana is. Oh my gosh. This must be, I didn't even realize it was specific to Southern Baptist, but it's a like kids VBS type thing, except it goes throughout the school year, and
it's like
Wednesday nights, right? And you like earn badges, and you recite Bible verses. Anyway, I went to this thing at a church that told us that all drums were evil from the devil.
All drums, okay,
because they came from devil worshiping ceremonies in Africa, generalized Africa, not any particular country.
Sure, yeah,
the whole continent. Yes,
sure,
is responsible for the devil worshiping drums.
Yeah. They all got together.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't. There was no
how do you guys
source
feel about drums?
Cited. Yeah,
I believe there's a drum in the Bible. So
there are multiple drums in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know how they explain that one.
And
they don't.
And the drums are on the good side, just to be clear.
Right.
All right. Well, anyway.
All right.
Back to trading card games. In the small town of Kawara in Japan. Kawara. Yes.
Yes.
It's in Japan. Like we're gonna know where
kids,
it is.
Yeah, I know that one.
Kids are there not playing Pokemon cards.
I heard
cards.
About this.
Or
yeah, I'll keep my mouth
or baseball open. Cards. They have a new collectible card game that they're playing based on middle-aged or old men from the local community.
That's savage. Yeah. That sounds really fun, though.
The best part is that the community started it. Like
that is awesome.
Yeah. So you can go and buy a pack of cards with pictures of old men from the community with stats and abilities and do like a little card game with it.
That is so fun.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
Would you guys want to like have your card?
Whoa, old man cards.
It's
okay.
Or middle aged. And when you are middle aged or old, would you want to do that?
Absolutely.
It sounds fun, right? Yeah. Like a, I don't know.
All right. So like, let's put this in the form of a Magic Gathering card. What are some stats that go on the card?
Okay. Well, Magic Gathering, there are five classifications.
Oh, all right.
So you could be red, blue, green, black, or white.
I don't know what any of those
are. We don't have time to get into it, I'm afraid.
Red fire, blue water, green forest, black swamp. White plains.
Okay, none of that helps what I was trying to do. Okay, so we've got like strength.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's strength, constitution, dexterity, intelligence.
Okay, so like a D&D stat.
Charisma. That's more D&D based. Yeah.
So I think I'd want like high charisma and moderate strength.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I'll go some intelligence and wisdom.
Is it endurance? Yeah. Is endurance a thing?
No, constitution would be.
Yeah.
Endurance. Constitution and endurance?
Yeah.
I have a really great constitution, unlike other things right now. Some constitutions are falling apart, but mine's still good. My constitution
subtle,
is still strong.
Well, anyway.
Don't know what he's talking about.
So it includes 47 different cards, including Mr. Honda, who's 74, a former fire chief.
Mr. Brigade. Honda?
Yeah, a former fire brigade chief.
It's a Japanese.
Keep the town.
I thought it was Korean, but okay.
There's Soba Master, Mr. Takashita.
Soba Master?
He runs
like
a local
noodle?
Soba noodle making class.
I love him.
Legendary status. Yeah.
Legendary status.
Yeah.
This is so fun.
And some kids are coming to the older men in the village and asking them to sign their cards.
I would gladly sign the cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was honored and shocked when they asked me to sign it, Mr. Fuji said, laughing. I never imagined to become a trading card, let alone have fans.
That's great.
I know. We should all do this.
I really think this is awesome. I think it's so cute, so fun. Like, so the cards definitely do have, like, you can see at least pictures of like old men on them.
I want a pack.
Should we start a Lord of Life trading card game?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that this has got some legs. You know.
Me too.
Yeah.
We could fundraise with it somehow.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
The world's our oyster.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this was designed so that kids would be more invested in their own community.
I love that.
And you know, and see like older members of the community, not, you know, as like people to avoid, but like, you know, friends that
scary
are like
old men.
Scary old men, yeah. Strengthen the connection between children and older generations.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah. And very it worked. Wholesome. It says it worked. Kids have started attending local events, volunteering for communal activities, just for a chance to meet the old men from their card games.
Yep.
Yeah.
I will say that the skeptic in me, when I first started hearing about this, I had not read the like article or anything. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is going to have a bad twist. Like, this is going to go somewhere dark and it's not going to be good. But right. it actually is
very. And then
the
children
sweet.
Started disappearing. Right. And, yeah.
That's where it felt like it was going to. It did not go there. But, it was, yeah. Good for Japan for keeping it wholesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's really cute. I'm pro the trading card old man game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this idea.
We got some old men in the congregation. Let's get them on
we
card.
We got old everything in the congregation.
We got a lot of old.
That's a weird way to say that. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're listening, you're like, hey, make me a trading card.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm in. Yeah.
There's like an AI thing that's going around right now. It's like turn you into an action figure. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah,
can,
I saw on Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure we can get something to turn people into a trading card.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. ChatGPT and I are good friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they edit my devotions that I put out on Mondays.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of them, it told me it really liked it. ChatGPT. Oh,
thank you.
ChatGPT.
Yeah, it told me that my devotion was very heartfelt and they really enjoyed, editing it.
Okay.
Oh.
Like, well, thanks, ChatGPT. I'm converting ChatGPT, everybody. Right. I'm on the move.
Doing the Lord's work.
We're going to have some other conversation. Haven't we already talked about whether or not AI can be saved?
Because there's an AI. There was the AI priest. He's been defrocked.
Yes.
With the Gatorade incidents. Right. Fabulous.
You baptize one person with Gatorade, right. And suddenly everybody gets up in arms. Yeah.
All right, so let's get to our main topic. We are in Medium.com.
What Ooh. Is Medium? Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought when I read it.
I don't really know.
Maybe it is. Maybe this is the magazine for fortune tellers.
I don't think
our
so.
Our friends at Medium.
I don't think this is the magazine for fortune tellers. Okay.
I mean,
so.
We're using them more for the launching point than we are for any sort of theological significance. So, yeah.
Well, sure, I mean, sure. The author is a Christian.
Do they like self-identify? Like,
oh, absolutely.
I think they're a pastor, okay. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He talks about the first thing was being a pastor at a funeral.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, have you heard this thing
mm-hmm.
that some Christians out there
yes.
are saying empathy is a sin?
Yes.
Can't relate.
I don't understand.
yes,
yeah,
I've heard it. I've
I have heard this for several years now, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's obviously it's a new thing. This is not a, that empathy is actually a sin.
Yeah. Should we define empathy?
Yeah, let's define empathy.
Elise, that
oh
seems
my
like your
gosh.
Territory.
Wow.
You
on
ask
the
for the
spot.
Definition. Yeah.
No, I mean,
it's the ability to relate to somebody else normally in their suffering or their experience, right?
To be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes, right?
Yeah.
And it is distinct from sympathy. Like sympathy, you feel bad for that person. Empathy doesn't necessarily mean you feel bad for them. It means that you're able to see yourself from another person's perspective.
Yes.
Or see another person from their own perspective.
Right.
Yeah. So there are several Christians, not super well known, but John Piper's website, his one of his writers there has talked heavily about the sin of empathy.
Oh, John Piper.
Keep coming back to
them. Elon Musk on Joe Rogan talked about how empathy was bad for America.
Well, nobody's surprised by that one, but
so,
Elon Musk not claiming to promote Christian values in that particular interview.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. But you know, but it's in kind of that same vein.
Yeah, it absolutely is in that same vein. Yeah.
All right. So this is from Medium. Why the sin of empathy is a completely toxic Christian belief.
Okay.
By Dan Foster.
Okay.
To be clear, Dan Foster is saying that the belief that empathy is a sin is a toxic belief. Right?
That is correct.
Yeah, and
yes.
He's got Christian in quotes
okay,
as
right.
well. Like,
yeah.
it's
right.
not, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's very much anti
okay.
that belief that empathy is a sin.
Yep.
All right.
The headline was awkwardly phrased. So,
so he starts off in this article talking about empathetic moment for him. His first funeral as a pastor was a father who committed suicide on Father's Day.
Oh.
And
yeah. That sounds horrible.
Yeah, yeah. And so coming into like a home and meeting with the family and, you know, being like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. There's no note even pointing to what happened.
Yeah. That's his first funeral he's ever done as a foof. That's like straight into the deep end, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
it doesn't get much deeper.
And he said, you know, like, look, he just sat with them. Like he didn't preach, didn't give a lecture, didn't give anything theological. He just kind of sat and listened And part of it was he's like, what could I say? Mm-hmm. You know, I think like that was some point. And then he realized something. It was a privilege to be there, to be like a presence for them. Mm-hmm. He quotes Henry Nouwen, who was a Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a writer. I read a few of his books.
He is a priest. I think he's part of one of the orders, but I don't remember which one.
Yeah. Those who can sit with their fellow men, not knowing what to say, but knowing they should be there, can bring new life into a dying heart and witness the birth of new fellowship, the fellowship of the broken.
Mm.
Yeah. So he says, yeah, this was his first experience. This is what he did. He identifies this as like empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it's one of the most Christ-like things we can offer.
Yeah.
But apparently some Christian leaders think that kind of empathy is a sin.
Yeah.
Why, that's pray tell?
All right, here's the argument.
Okay. Mm.
And this is his summation of the argument. Empathy, unlike compassion, is dangerous because it immerses us too much in another person's pain. It blurs the line between right and wrong. It makes us vulnerable to moral compromise. It leads us to feel with people instead of correcting them.
So I'm going to bet that this has been used as an argument about people in the LGBTQ community primarily first, right?
I think across the board, teachings that are not in line with what they want to teach, right? LGBTQ could be inclusion of migrant populations. It could be whatever, right? Anything that's outside of their quote-unquote moral compass.
Yeah.
You can't empathize with woke people. You can't empathize with someone who's suffering from whatever, right?
Does this sound like a little bit of a backlash against like the, you know, more inclusive?
Sure. I think that's a fair concern.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are using this article. Mm-hmm. Originally, I found a different article by David French, mm-hmm. who we've used mm-hmm. before.
Yep.
He was a conservative lawyer who was also a writer. And he wrote like the bizarre version of American Christianity that thinks empathy is a sin. He's also thinking this is bananas.
Yeah.
Right.
And he definitely traces it more to like a political angle.
Yes.
And so we kind of chose to kind of use more of like a theological angle, but he does kind of mention those things like specifically against like migrants or the DOGE cuts of like aid to foreign countries. And when people say like, hey, that's going to really affect humanity's lives and being, you know, kind of told like, that's woke, you know, or appealing to heart is not working for that sect of Christianity.
Yeah.
That's kind of bigger and bigger. All right. He mentions a real life example, Bishop Booty. We kind of talked about her sermon.
We did.
And then lots of people attacked her for her untethered empathy, as if caring too deeply for the oppressed is the real problem in this world. Right. Like we're like, you know what's wrong? We care so much about the poor and downtrodden. Ugh, America, seriously.
It's like Michael Scott, I work too hard. I care too much. Those are her flaws.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea too much compassion is dangerous. He says it's been around for a while, but it's gained even more traction in certain Christian circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is an interesting question. And the interesting question is, where is the line between having open dialogue and conversation with someone and getting caught up in something that is legitimately outside of your own moral compass, right? I think there is an interesting question there. I don't think that means empathy is sinful or bad. I think we come to a very different conclusion. But I think the question of, okay, you know, if we're taking this in the theological lens, let's say I'm having a dialogue with a person of Jewish faith or Islamic faith, right? I'm going to be holding a certain moral compass, even if I'm hearing the world from their perspective. And risk is maybe not the right word, but what are the things that we have to be aware of when we're in that conversation that could start to sway our compass from then understanding like, okay, I'm entering this conversation with understand that Jesus Christ is the crucified and risen Lord. You're coming at it from a different perspective. How do we have that conversation in a way that's healthy and safe? I think is a reasonable question. This just is taking this in a very dark and unhealthy answer.
Yeah, I think for me, I see this as like a sect of Christianity that sees empathy as through the lens of it's scary.
Yeah.
Because it challenges the control or kind of the
yeah.
either the faith or the social status. Like, again, if you... talk to LGBTQ people, especially those that kind of grew up in church and their experiences of being excluded, yeah. kicked out of youth groups, humiliated, mm-hmm. and you feel empathy for them, it challenges of like, was the faith that did that wrong to begin with?
Yeah.
Right.
And or if I hear experience of like an immigrant's experience of coming to America, trying to build a better life, are we, you know, we read some guy in Maryland who's been mm-hmm. shipped off to El Salvador and yeah. we admit wrongly, and also the government is saying, we're not going to bring it back.
Yeah.
And when you have empathy there, it kind of challenges like, what do I actually think about immigrant mm-hmm. immigrants more than just like, get people who don't belong here out of this country.
Yeah.
It forces me to see them as real human beings.
Yeah.
Right.
Or here's people in Gaza being bombed.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the version of that story where one side is good and one side is bad.
Sure.
And it challenges simpler. That view.
Yeah.
Because that is much more easy, right? It's much easier to think immigrants are bad for this country without having to hear their personal stories and seeing them as real people. Or easier to think an anti-LGBTQ theology is right without hearing what that actually does to the gay community
sure.
and how it makes them, you know, the horror that it went, you know, coming out to one's youth group was in high school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for theologies that are very narrow minded and don't have room for nuance, that's scary for people to empathize, right?
Sure,
because
sure.
then it changes things, or it should change things
yeah.
for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he highlights a guy named Joe Rigney who writes for Desiring God. That's John Piper, who's a relatively famous Christian writer and pastor.
Okay.
And I read one of his essays.
Okay.
It's not good.
Okay.
The guy on John Piper's website.
Correct.
Is that according to an edit by ChatGPT, or is this a Patrick Nazaroff?
According to me.
Okay.
So I'll say this. He writes in the style of the Screwtape Letters.
Oh.
I really like the Screwtape letters.
I know. But like that worked one time.
Yeah. Yes. He's barely, it is a clear ripoff of the Screwtape letters.
Right. And like, who are you? Who do you think you are? C.S. Lewis?
Yeah.
Sit down.
Come on. Yeah. C.S. Lewis is one of the most talented and gifted Christian writers ever.
Yeah.
You know, and here's, you know.
We stan a C.S. Lewis.
Yeah,
I don't know who
sure.
this imposter is.
Yeah. So it's that, and he's framing empathy as a deception, something the devil himself is using to pull people away from God.
Okay.
He argues true Christian love keeps its distance, stays tethered to objective truth, and doesn't let emotions cloud judgment.
Okay, Spock.
I was not expecting the Star Trek reference to come out there.
I'm for it.
I'm not opposed. It just caught me off guard. Yeah. That was nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all right. Can you read his thing one more time?
Maybe we can challenge this. He argues Christian love keeps its distance, stays tethered to objective truth, and doesn't let emotions cloud judgment.
Where is he getting that? Like, what keeps Christian love keeps its distance?
So I think
he's
that's
getting it from his own little brain, and
right.
not from the Bible.
He sounds like a delight.
I think Christian love keeps its distance is the easiest one to like push back against right away, right? Because you can point to the Gospels in the ways in which Christian love, like Jesus, is going straight to the people who need it, right? Even in the fact that God becomes human, like mm-hmm. that Jesus is born into this world is like a sign sure. that God says love does not keep its distance. Love breaks into that space.
Yeah.
And so that's one, right? I think we can start there.
Yeah, what the criticism of Jesus is this man welcomes sinners
yeah.
and eats with them.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
so he's not keeping his distance from the broken,
right.
you know, like from those that are in need of Christian love or something different. He is friends with prostitutes. This is something
yeah.
that is used as an accusation against him. So like, yeah.
All right. So let's say the next part then.
Christian love keeps his distance. I think we're all going to say, mm-hmm. I don't see that in scripture.
No.
I see no evidence.
I see the opposite
yeah.
a lot.
Stays tethered to objective truth.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that's in conflict with empathy.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can be empathetic to someone and, I mean, I think he and I are probably going to have very different understandings of what objective truth is.
Right.
But I think that, allowing yourself to see the world from someone else's perspective does not mean that your perspective becomes invalid.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm going to, you know, try to toe a fine line here. And so feel free to pull me back if I'm going somewhere too dangerous. But I think there is the potential that if we lose ourselves in someone else's experience, right, if we like to the point where we stop identifying our own experience and just only see the world through someone else's experience, I think that is dangerous. And yeah. I think that's dangerous on a psychological, emotional health level as opposed to necessarily just a spiritual one, right? So I think there is a sense of how do we maintain our sense of self while empathizing with someone else in a healthy manner? That, sure. That's a reasonable question and a reasonable thing for us to have. Tethered, I don't know. I don't like the way he said it.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe it's okay. I mean, Jesus certainly stays tethered to truth. I mean, if we're looking for a biblical witness, Jesus is not going to... The whole reason that Jesus's ministry is successful is because he stays tethered to God in ways that all the forebearers in the Old Testament failed to do so.
Yeah,
for sure.
So
yeah.
And there's
yeah. I'm with you. I think that extreme version of empathy maybe could like if you heard we'll use an example we've said before an LGBTQ teen share about their experience in youth group and it was horrifying for them.
Yeah,
and you could land on the there should just not be a youth group.
Yeah,
because they're because of your experience.
Yeah.
Nobody should go through that again. So let's just get rid of it altogether.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think that that loses sight of like, one, a healthy youth group doesn't do those things and can be a positive for kids, even kids like you. You know, you know, like I think that that could be, you know, like so I think that might be there, you know. But I don't think very few people ultimately land on that space.
Yeah, I agree.
I think, too, just from, like, a general well-being perspective, like, it is possible to experience so much empathy and not have ways to channel that that are healthy you can't really function on your own in your own experiences healthily, right? Or there's also this thing called empathy burnout where you have needed to feel empathy, I think, usually for a individual so frequently over and over again that you get to a point where you cannot access that empathy anymore. Yeah. Right. So those are both kind of maybe side effects of not handling or interacting with empathy in a way that's healthy.
I think we've seen this play out on like every medical drama in the last 20 years, right? Where you have the new intern or whatever who experiences caring for a patient for the first time and suddenly they're like exhausted and crying in the closet and the, you know, grisly old nurse comes in and says, it's going to be okay. And, you know, I mean, we see it. You got to learn how to do it in a healthy way.
Yeah.
But it's not, the outcome is never stop being empathetic, right? Like even in the medical drama, the outcome is never stop caring or stop putting yourself in their shoes.
It's right.
Learn how to do it in a healthy way. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
What was the last line then?
The last bit for him. Sorry, I had to scroll back up. It doesn't let emotions cloud judgment.
I think that's from Jesus's perspective, right? If we're looking to the biblical witness, I think that's fair.
Right.
Jesus is not like Jesus makes the decisions not based on emotion, but based on what he how he experiences the world and how God is calling him forward in that space. I think that's fair. I don't think that's a reason to not be empathetic because I don't think empathy clouds that judgment.
Right.
I don't think that we should make decisions from a position of a clouded judgment from whatever, but I don't think empathy causes us to do that if we're doing empathy in a healthy way.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about we've probably all known people that make rash decisions based on the feelings of the moment and that tend to not be very effective in their decision making, right? But I've never met somebody who I felt like was ineffective in their empathetic decision making.
Right.
Right? Like, in fact, that seems like a very effective way to make decisions.
Yeah. Obviously we firmly disagree with Joe Rigney and this kind of idea to begin with. And I think, you know, the reality is like, I think empathy drives us to be more like Jesus, not less.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That we've already mentioned this, like he seeks out those who are on the margins, befriends them, engages with them, eats with them. We see a woman in front of Jesus accused of adultery. The law, the rules say to kill her. He responds with love and compassion, even from the cross, which we just celebrated a few days ago.
Yep.
Jesus says, forgive them. You know, like he seals, looks at his tormentors with love, you know, and says they know not what they're doing, right? Like he's at least like putting himself empathetically in their shoes and acknowledging like they don't fully get what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I feel like this is so bizarre and so dangerous, but I think it does come from this place of like theological or political fear that if you love those on the outside, your theology or your political stance might change.
Correct.
And that is the problem. So you can't, you've got to keep them at arm's distance.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
you've got to keep them at bay because if they get too close, your theology and your political stance are threatened.
Yeah, and I think maybe that's the biggest distinction that we can make here, because Jesus intentionally went close because he needed people's theology and political persuasions to be changed, right? Mm-hmm. And so Jesus did these things to change the way that we cared about people, to change the way we thought about people. So, yeah, empathy probably is going to change you, but that's not a bad thing, right? The Christian mindset should be empathy changes me because that allows me to see this person how God sees them, right? And it allows me to see the world from a perspective that I don't have on my own. And you, single individual listener, are not the only person that God ever created, right? You don't have all the answers to the universe or even to your own life. So let's stop pretending like we do.
Yeah, the viewpoint of I am already perfect and therefore should not be influenced is incredibly dangerous. Like,
yeah. Only pastors have that.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that you can't even laugh at like it's, yeah. I was kidding, just teasing.
We can dive more into Dan Foster's words here. Do we have anything else we gotta get to, or do we feel like we've said it?
What else has Dan got to say? Does he have anything we haven't like addressed?
What else does Dan gotta say?
Dan.
Yeah.
Well,
you had a twang on that.
We got his quote here.
Okay.
From another Christian dude.
Another could just swim.
Ben
One
Garrett,
of the masses.
A tweet, and he's tweeting about
a tweet.
Bishop Booty.
Okay.
Okay. Is it bad? Is it good?
It's not great. Okay. Do not commit the sin of empathy. The snake is God's enemy and yours too. She hates God and his people. You need to properly hate in response. She is not merely deceived, but it is a deceiver. Your eye shall not pity.
What? She hates God and his people.
Yeah. And it includes a photo of Bishop Booty for some reason.
Sure.
Obviously.
Because she's the deceiver.
Well, because she's holding like a little scepter that looks snake-esque.
Which is just let me see the scepter. Yeah, that's just like a fancy crusher.
Didn't Moses hold a staff with a snake on it?
That turned into a snake.
Right. Yeah. Like,
well, he held that one, and then he held up an actual like staff with a snake on the top of it.
Right.
And
that's where like, the medical thing comes from.
And Jesus even brings up that snake with a staff. He compares it to himself.
Yep.
That one day, I'll be like that snake on a staff, and you'll look to me.
Yep.
And be saved.
And we'll be like, wait, what? You're a snake?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think I love that story because that Jesus redeeming even the image of a snake, the original villain.
The OG.
Yeah, is really like some awesome stuff that the Bible is doing there. But this is crazy town. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Like, I think what happens here is we see someone that it gets back to what you've talked about, Patrick, with fear and all of that. You see someone that disagrees with us or presents a point of view that we don't align with, and we say, "Well, they're the deceiver. Don't have empathy, and
the enemy."
And now we don't have to listen to them anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's much safer to say they're just the bad guys, and we don't have to deal with it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is also the danger of, like, this is why empathy matters so much, right? Because if I'm not empathetic to those with whom I disagree, then I'm as much at risk of making them the enemy in the way that they're trying to make me the enemy.
Absolutely.
Right?
So
empathy perhaps is our greatest weapon in that sense.
No.
I just had a little moment there.
Are there ways you think that empathy could be a bad thing?
Outside of what we already listed as far as like losing
I've got
yourself?
At least one, you know. Like,
why don't you start us off and give at least a moment to.
I think if you engage in Christian empathy, you might be taken advantage of. By the intentional deceivers. Like somebody out there might tell a sob story, might say, I need $20 for gas. Here's why. This is what's going on. And you give them the money and they spend it on something that's not gas, right? Like they, and we, you know, support people here through our pastor discretionary fund. Sure. Is it possible somebody has just told a sob story? Maybe, you know, like that's a possibility. We, right. I think we do diligence. I think we try to make sure we're helping the right people, but it's a possibility.
Yeah.
And so I think you could, like, people, again, so again, say, like, because there might be a bad actor out there who is using your empathy against you,
yeah,
then you should not have empathy for all.
I don't remember who it was where I first heard the story, but there's some theologian who told the story of this situation, right, where the person, like, asks them, like, why are you helping that person? They're just going to waste that money. They're going to go spend
it on Lewis.
Was it C.S. Lewis who talked about it?
I think so.
Okay. The response is essentially, like, what I do with my money is not about them, right? It's it's my way, like, me giving this money away is about my response to God. It has nothing to do with what they do with it. Yeah.
I did read a story about a golfer, too. Some woman came up to him, told him a sob mm-hmm. story. He gave money and then turned sob story about, like, her kid is dying of cancer. Sure. And he gave her money to help out. And then somebody exposed, like, actually, that was fake.
Mm-hmm.
And he responded, and I have no idea if this is true. I don't even know the golfer's name.
Yeah.
So, you know, like,
Tiger
Woods. The response, definitely not Tiger Woods.
Arnold Palmer.
Maybe one.
Yeah,
Palmer,
definitely.
But his response was, that's great news because there's not a kid dying of cancer.
Sure.
Right.
Right. Like, that's better. Like, I'd rather be taken advantage of than have a kid die of cancer and I gave $100 to that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I think that might be, I think, an appropriate Christian response to say, like, I want empathy for the world so much that maybe it means sometimes I'm taken advantage of that by bad actors, but that is more preferable than keeping people at a distance and not trusting anything that they would have to say.
Yeah, I mean, when Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers and blessed are the meek and blessed are the merciful, he doesn't say so long as you're not getting had, right? It's like you're supposed to do it even if, you know, it doesn't always go your way. Like, Jesus acknowledges you're going to be persecuted because of me.
Yeah.
That's Yeah.
Like, anything. Your hate can be manipulated.
100%.
Right. And I would rather the thing that I'm putting out into the world be empathy than hate if I'm going to be manipulated either way.
You know what you should do?
What should I do?
You should write your own modern take on the Screwtape letters.
Yeah. It wasn't done well enough the first time.
Right. Maybe
throw my hat in the ring.
It's all the rage right now.
Maybe flip it. Angel to angel writings.
Okay. I'm going to do biblical angels, though, with, like, all the eyeballs.
Sure.
Six wings. Yeah.
So the first bit of advice, get some clear eyes because you got all those eyes. It's a dusty world out there, angels.
You
got to keep.
You
got to need some drops.
It's a Visine. Yeah.
All right, he ends. The real sin isn't empathy, it's hardness of heart. Jesus never warned against the sin of empathy, but he did warn against the sin of hardness of heart.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely, again, a far more biblical take of, like, this is the problem, or this is an issue that the religious leaders of the day are having.
Mm-hmm.
Incredibly religious, incredibly, you know, a religious based on following the rules, purity, but and certainty, but has no room for love, grace, and compassion for others or understanding.
Yeah.
He said, so if empathy is a sin, Jesus himself was guilty of it. But of course it's not. Because when you strip empathy out of faith, what's left?
Because duh.
A religion that justifies cruelty in the name of truth, a religion that prefers certainty over kindness, a religion that sees suffering and asks, what did they do to deserve it? Instead of how can I help? And that isn't Christianity. So there you go, Dan Foster.
Yeah.
All right. Well done, Dan.
Well, anything else, friends?
No.
Anything else we're feeling empathetic about?
He is risen.
He's risen indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw, you know, churches trying to be trendy. And so the TikToks that I've seen recently are like two people over in the side talking. And a youth says to the older pastor who's like writing on his laptop or whatever, he is risen. And it's like the RIZZE.
Risen, like charisma. Yeah.
He's got riz.
Yeah. Because they're like flirting or whatever. And the pastor, without knowing what they says, he is risen indeed. And because it's Jesus, right?
Sure.
Miscommunication between the ages.
Right. I'm going to say Jesus has risen and has riz. Okay. He's got it. He's both in spades. That's okay.
Risen with riz.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just put that in as a typo. You know, we're doing this before Easter. We can still make changes to our Easter Sunday.
Oh, boy.
So can be, he is risen.
It's not too late to make this your sermon. Jesus has riz.
I would have to have like a crash course in what the heck Riz is.
That would be
before.
So charisma. Embarrassing, like, for all of us.
It would
that.
Be incredibly cringe. Yeah. Incredibly cringe, but I'm for it.
Is cringe good? Is cringe a good thing?
Yeah, no. It's great. Thing. You want it. You want the more cringe, the better.
Love it.
Skibbity.
Skibbity Jesus. All right. Well, I think since I said Skibbity Jesus, that about wraps
it's
us
time.
Up for the day. Yeah. If you have thoughts on what you would want on your Lord of Life trading card, you can send that to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com, and you can find all of our pre- and post-resurrection episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Yeah, happy Easter, everybody.
Happy Easter.
It's Easter.
Yeah. But how long does
Hoppy
the Easter,
Easter.
Easter season last? 40 days?
Oh, my gosh.
No, Lent is 40 days. Easter is 50 days. Well, 49 days. The 50th day is Pentecost.
What about Ascension? We don't get that one in there?
The Ascension is in there. It just doesn't change. It's part of the Easter season.
Do you understand this at all?
I understand a little.
Okay.
he knew to talk about the Ascension.
I'm going
to
be I'm a bad Lutheran, so stuff I don't really care about, but I yeah. understand.
The Easter season goes until Pentecost, which is the 50th day. Penta is 50th. Okay. And so it goes until Pentecost. The Ascension happens a week before Pentecost, if I remember correctly.
Penta 50 cost how much something is.
Exactly, yes.
Cost 50.
Right. Yeah. It's $50.
Pentecost was it. So Easter is celebrated around Passover because that's what Jesus and his disciples were celebrating. And Pentecost was the Festival of Booths, I think is the right one, or Sukkot, which was the Jewish festival that took place 50 days after Passover. So we still follow that because when they're gathered for they're gathered for Pentecost. It's an already existing holiday that the disciples are there. Gathered in Jerusalem 50 days after all this stuff has taken place. And that's when the Holy Spirit shows up.
You've definitely lost Elise.
I too prefer a booth to a table. Yeah,
that's what it's about. Yeah.
That's true. I mean, like, who wants table?
Nobody.
Right? Give me that booth.
You want to be able to slide, you know?
I mean, don't you want your booth to have a table?
Yeah.
But, you know, they ask booth or a table.
Oh, do they say booth? Okay.
Yeah, that really should be booth or chairs,
it
right?
Should be, it should be, but yes. They don't. They say booth or table.
Yeah, I was at a booth recently that had way too little leg room, and so, like, I was, like, all, like, it was just two
that
of us,
awkward.
But I was, like, all, like, jammed up on it. Yeah. It was very, I
that,
stood
that
up
would
and almost
be,
fell
that
over.
That would be the downside of the booth.
That was the
with the chair, you have the ability, I dictate how
that's
much
right.
leg room
right.
I have.
I need some leg room. Figure this out.
And I dictate when I go to the bathroom. If I'm in a booth,
right.
somebody else maybe have to.
That's true.
I'm either have to slide or be slidden. Yes. Right.
Or you pull the little kid move and crawl under the table.
Right.
Classic.
People love that.
I mean, they do when a little kid does it.
Right.
Is that...
But especially if you've just met.
If you're like on your first date.
Right. Even if you're on the end.
Excuse me. Crawled at the other right. end.
All right. This is devolving. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more.
Did I do the thing already?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
And then we got into Pentecost. Okay.
Beyond Sunday.